The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
On News Talk.
Hello, you're very welcome along to the Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan, your host, coming up this week. We'll be speaking to the money doctor himself, John Lowe, about the importance of setting up a will to protect your family home so that it goes to the loved ones you intended to. TV architect and TV personality Hugh Wallace will be stopping by very shortly to discuss the need for more when it comes to the vacant property grant. County Leash may be doubly landlocked, but that hasn't stopped a couple from making it a beach resort. We'll be finding all about that in a little while. And interior designer Anne Toohey, also known as the Room Junkie, will be giving us some tips on how to boost physical and mental well-being through the interior design choices that we make. Now, we do love to hear from listeners on the Home Show podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. And of course, all our pods, previous pods and shows are up on the Newstalk app or on newstalk.com. And you can listen to us on a Saturday morning on the old wireless from 8 a.m. Now, I don't know about you, I got thinking recently about morning routines and the back to school and the weather changing and all that kind of thing. And I'm curious as to what the morning routine is for lots and lots of people. Now, I suppose it differs between a weekday or a school day and a weekend. But are there things or habits or things that you have to do that are simply red lines for you? You can't do without. They're non-negotiable to getting up in the morning. And for me, it is really good coffee because I'm only allowed to have it in the morning. It's a crossword and Pilates. And without one of those three things, I do not feel quite right for the whole day. It kind of gets my brain and body in action. It might be the healthiest of things, but that's what I do. And I'd love to know from other people what it is they do and what they simply couldn't change. Because it's all about that positive energy and trying to set yourself up for the day. And that is one of the things that one of my guests will be talking about later in the show, and how we can design our home and use our home to maximise that positive energy. And you know what, folks? We'll take whatever we can get in this day and age. There's so much negativity around that we have to do everything we can to try and feel better about ourselves and the world around us. For the moment, though, if it is coffee is your spoiler of choice, well, then pour yourself another cup. You're very welcome along to the Home Show. Now, we featured vacant property grants on the Home Show before. Up to 50,000 is available from the government to renovate a vacant and property, and up to 70,000 if the same property is derelict. But my first guest today is calling on the government to do even more in the upcoming budget next week. Architect and TV personality Hugh Wallace joins me now. Hugh, you're very welcome back to the Home Show.
All excited. Lovely to be here again.
Lovely to see you. Now, you might start by telling listeners who aren't familiar with it what it actually is available and what the vacant property grant is.
So the vacant property grant is for a property that's 2 years without anybody living in it. And then you can avail of the grant. Now, it does come with terms and conditions, but there are two elements to the grant. If it's vacant for 2 years, there's a grant of up to 50,000. And if there's structural work needs to be done, there's a grant of 20,000. But in my opinion, the grant of 20,000 for structural work needs to be increased to 50, because that's where it's a bottomless pit. And you definitely need assistance if the property needs structural alterations or changes. And we have to remember that this grant is for existing properties. So this is the most sustainable way to actually deliver properties in this country.
Okay, so what problem is the 50,000 trying to solve? I mean, is it de facto that a vacant house needs a load of work done to it?
Of course it is. So the kitchen's gone, the wiring's gone, the electrics are gone. It's inevitable you have to do a complete fit. And on top of that, you're also more than likely going to use the opportunity to do a deep retrofit, which is where you're bringing the house up to a B2 plus rating or ideally an A rating. And then all of a sudden you can put in your air to water pumps, but you can also put in where you recirculate the air. Then you have a house that is really energy efficient.
And yet, people aren't taking up the grant in the numbers maybe that the government had originally hoped for. It would seem that because banks are reluctant to give a mortgage on it until maybe after the work is done, it's very, very hard for people. So you're kind of shrinking the market, as it were, to people maybe who are happy to take on a project and have the cash to buy the thing.
Well, I'd say that an awful lot of banks will allow you to draw down as you do the building up. The SEAI also will provide assistance in relation to a deep retrofit. So they will, in fact, fund the retrofit. And they will also give you a top-up of around 25,000 if there's other work you'd like to do in the home. So people have to investigate grants really well. And that's very important. And I do know banks that have lent against grants as well.
And we've had the SEAI on the show, that Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. And certainly architects like you who are extolling the benefits of these grants, because they are very substantial. I mean, if you're doing a complete retrofit of everything from wrapping to solar panels to heat pumps and all that, you can get nearly up to 50% of the work covered.
It's up to a top of 27,500.
Is your
upper limit.
Right. Now,
but to get the maximum grants, you have to understand everything comes with terms and conditions. So if, for example, you decide today you're going to run out and you're going to get solar panels on your roof, in doing that, you've now, when you get a grant, it goes to the house, not to the individual. So all of a sudden, did the house receive a grant? Tick. So now you can't avail of the full grants that are available if you go to a one-stop shop. You can only have pick-off grants, which is substantially less than if you go to a one-stop shop.
You sound very knowledgeable on this because I know you've been through it yourself of late. You have a project underway, which is very personal to your heart. Tell us about it.
Well, Martin and I are renovating a house which has become an epic. It's 2.5 years of a journey. But at the end of the day, what we will have is a fantastic home right in the city centre, and we'll be part of a community. And that's, to me, what living in the city is about, or living in our towns and villages, is about being in a community. And we've missed that trick by people going, oh, I want to live in out in the fields and everything else. So I think there's huge opportunity. Even still, there's huge opportunity to buy properties. You do have to be willing to roll up your sleeves, do some of the grunt work yourself, and that's how you will actually make them affordable. But you also have to use people like, you know, in my case, I'm very lucky to be using Electric Ireland Superhomes because they are assisting me in the process. And that's the only way that I can understand, one, the correct system, but secondly, to maximise the grants that are available to me in my home.
Do you think that there is a reluctance for lots of people to move back into city centres and town centres when it can be cheaper and easier just to buy a new home on the outskirts or renovate a bungalow on an acre? Because there was a big shift towards that really around the 1960s and 70s,
70s
when we were
90s,
trying to push people out of 90s. The cities. Do you think we have a kind of maybe a bit of snobbery about it?
Oh, we're definitely snobs. You know, and I think that's a shame. Like, I've been in the most wonderful towns, travelling with the Great House Revival. And, it's just amazing. So you go to Youghal, is wonderful. Boyle, the architecture is just wonderful. You go down to Cork and you walk down Oliver Plunkett Street. But if you look up, there's no one. There's no one living above the shops. And that has to change. We have to understand, if you don't change and we don't move into our towns and cities, we're actually fudging the whole idea of sustainability. Because when you build in a field, you have to build the road, you have to build in the water, the toilet, the infrastructure, and you have to build the schools. You have to build all of those. And it's very difficult to build community because community evolves over time. So where we are and living at the moment, Pat, who lives at the end of the road, comes up with the street brush on a Saturday morning and the bleach to clean our section of the street and have no weeds. And to me, that is fabulous. That is what being in a community is. And equally in our towns and villages, the idea of being able to walk out the door and you have the butcher, the baker and the candlestick maker, particularly as we have an aged population. Even more importantly, if you look at Dublin at the moment, the schools in Dublin are looking for pupils. So there are huge advantages in living in the city, and you shouldn't dismiss it. And part of those advantages are not having a car.
Indeed, because transport is so much easier. But yet, Hugh, we find that people, to a large extent, aren't taking up the grants, generous as they are, in order to renovate above the shop, as it were. What are you calling on the government to do in this budget?
Oh, in this budget, we have got to get the grants right. They have to do derogations in relation to planning regulations so that you can take the staircase out of some of the buildings, not all of them, but some of the buildings, so they can be upgraded. The very interesting thing, as you get older, steps aren't a problem. The issue with steps is the depth of the riser and the length of the going. But unfortunately, in all the old buildings, they're nearly
vertical.
They're
steep and sheer, aren't they?
Correct. Okay. And they need to change.
Okay.
But once you decide you want to change the staircase, the world ends. And that has to change. That preconception. So do we as a society want people living in our towns and villages, or do we not? And that, to me, the simple answer to that is we do. And we must.
And do we know that there are a lot of vacant properties in places where people want to live? Which is in cities and suburbs.
Towns, in town, y'all, everywhere. Just to put this in context, in the census, there's 160,000 properties in the country, 50-50 between urban and rural. But on top of that, you have all the empty premises over the shops. So in my opinion, there's 250,000 vacant properties today, which are just so sustainable.
How much of a grant would it take, not for an architect like you who knows what they're doing, but for a regular person to say it's worth taking that project on, it's worth renovating something vacant and derelict over a shop?
100,000.
100,000.
We need. So you have to understand, to me, nobody knows. Everything we do is kept a secret. It's like the Living City Initiative is still there for another 3.5 years. But I'd say there's only 10 applicants. But to me, that is one of the best grants available. So I just think we need to really start spinning plates.
So increase the grants. Tell people about it.
Yes, that'll be helpful.
And get them involved. Okay,
correct.
That's your plan. Tell us about the house. What's it going to look like when it's done? How old is it?
It's about 120 years old. Yeah. It was a two-story cottage. And it's going to be a 2.5-story cottage when we finished. What it's going to look like is in dispute between Martin and myself.
So okay, I'm thinking how that is possible, because you, of the designer of plans, should have made it clear to your other client.
You must be joking. So Martin, I think, is using Amanda Bone. I think Amanda has an overview on our house. It's going to be white or white and white. But maybe a little bit more white.
Sleek and minimalist. We
know
absolutely.
This. Absolutely.
We know Amanda loves all that.
Yeah. So I have one bedroom. I'm going to have a respite room where I can go in
and lie down.
Yeah, and it'll be wallpaper and decor, and it'll be fabulous.
Oh, maximalist. All right, the whole thing. All right, you're going to have a big red button, are you?
That's
right, okay. When do you think you will be in it, finished?
January.
Oh, you're going to miss Christmas. Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny when you're doing your own house, because you get so involved in the project and you're up there with a measuring tape and a spray can and you say, move the wall 4 inches, move it that way 4 inches. And you do have to do that, because if you do that, you can really, you know, you're amazing how much space you can get in a home.
Is it difficult for you as an architect not getting emotionally involved in it, or are you completely emotionally invested and treated as a different project to your professional ones?
I have to deal with Martin at 11 o'clock at night going, will we have a ribbed glass or will we have plain glass in the doors? I'm going, I just want to sleep. Why am I having the conversation now?
So he's emotionally invested.
Oh, he's completely emotionally invested.
Come here to me. Will you enter it for Home of the Year?
Absolutely. I'm going to enter it for Home of the Year. I'm so excited.
Slight bias, I would think.
I would
have
thought so.
What else have you going on project-wise? I know you're up to your eyes.
We're filming the next series of Home of the Year.
Okay.
We're also just about to start a new series of The Great House Revival.
Okay.
We're looking for fabulous properties, ideally before 1915, anywhere, everything, every shape, every size. And we'd love to hear from you at property@animotv.ie.
All right, you Wallace, thanks a million for joining us again on The Home Show. And we will see if the minister has listened in this weekend. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Before the break, we had Hugh Wallace on and he was talking about the vacant property grant. He was very exercised over the value of it and thinks it should be increased in the budget and that more people should move into our cities. But lots and lots of people do not want to live in cities and want to live far, far away. So I want you to imagine you have a pina colada in hand, a cool breeze on your face, the sun warming your skin and a gorgeous sandy beach in front of you. No, it's not the Bahamas or even the Costa del Sol, but a staycation in County Laois. Yes, that's right. Landlocked Laois has just revealed its very own beach resort and it's all thanks to my next guest. Yvette Bow of Pond Beach Resort in County Laois joins me now. Yvette, you're very welcome along to The Home Show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Now, like so many good ideas, the Pond Beach Resort kind of was born out of the long days of lockdown. But really, I think the first question before I ask you what you did is, why did you build a beach resort in County Laois?
Well, the why is, I suppose it's hard to explain in a sense. Sometimes when you have these notions and ideas come to you, you either run with them or lock them away. And, you know, women are always full of ideas and I've been creative all my life. That's one of the things. And the second thing is I come from the Baltic Beach, which is I grew up beside the sea and grew up beside the rivers, lakes, and you name it. And then when the COVID hit, I mean, there's not much for you to do than time. And okay, we are a farm. So for us, the COVID day-to-day life didn't really much changed. My life did change because I was working in a very busy bar restaurant in the Dublin city center where I learned so much from the owner. And I suppose that's what encouraged me that I am capable to do much more. And then when the COVID came, I started to miss the water and the restrictions of travel and everything. And we had overgrown pond in one of the fields where the cows grazed. And you couldn't use that field for probably 8 months out of the year. So it was kind of lost and the ducks and swans would come to it. And one to another, I just said to the pot, give me the shovel and let's clean it up. Let's go. And then we cleaned it up. It literally started with a shovel and then we got the digger in and widen it. And it was full of springs, of course. And then we said, okay, what's next? And we didn't do the sand, but we did the pebble, loads of pebble. And then we built the bally beds and it's little bit by little bit. And then I ordered the kayaks. And that was kind of a bit of a funny because when I ordered the kayaks and the guy said, well, sure, I'm delivering them to the farm. I said, sure, you are. Have you not heard of the new thing that you go for the cows in a kayak these days? So, you know, there's a bit of a fun factor with it. And you Irish have a great humor. So why not?
Why not?
And that is the answer to it all. Why not? To look outside the box, you know, the chances of us ever getting a planning permission for our little adventure was slim to none. But it's thanks to Leslie Colton, who is now a retired architect, who helped us to actually pull this crazy idea. It would not happen without him. So we were so delighted that one day we got the phone call and said, hey, you have the planning permission. And then we were like, what now?
What now? And it's been onwards and upwards. Now, Iveta, you said that you grew up near the Baltic in Latvia. And of course, your partner, Pat, is also a farmer. So you didn't lick it off the ground, as we say in Ireland. You definitely had the basics together. How challenging was it? Because it's not, of course, just the clearing out a pond and putting down a pebble beach. You have built accommodation. You now have amenities. It's a holiday resort you've built.
Well, what the pond beach is, it's holiday homes, luxurious holiday homes for adults with the private porches and heated hot tubs. Some of them have hot tubs. Some of them have outdoor baths overlooking the pond, which lights up at the night. So yes, there's loads of palm trees and exotic element to it. But I do have to mention it that, you know, one thing is to dream up all this exotic exploration idea from your travels in your life. And the next thing is to put it in a life. And if I wouldn't have, as you say, Farmer Pat, who is a hands-on, nothing would have happened. I might be a fisherman's daughter, but he's a farmer's son. So it's a perfect match, I think.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned the hot tubs there. And I know that from where you originate from, that, and indeed in other parts of Europe, in Scandinavia, Eastern Europe, where you're from, that whole hot tub, hot water culture is hot and cold, is a very popular lifestyle thing. Is that what you were trying to kind of bring across? Because we do have the old hot tubs in some of the back gardens here in Ireland, but it's not really a culture we've ever fully embraced.
That is so true. I do come from the culture of the hot tubs and saunas and outdoors. I grew up on outdoors, glamping and, you know, all my childhood. And that's where we built the ranch cabin, which is already operating nearly 6 years. And that was my baby business idea, where I host the families and I bring families to see where the milking comes from. We do Christmas experience with the Santi and all. And that was successful, what encouraged us to go further and build this resort there. But yeah, one day at a time, you know. And what comes to the hot tubs, it's very common where I come from. But yet people have all over the island right now, hot tubs are popping everywhere. Mm. And it's one of the things to do. But people need to remember that it's very important to change water every single day. And that's what we stand for. We change it every single day. And it's important to us. So, and the sauna, well, stage three for the Palm Beach Resort, which is not fully completed. There's a couple more tricks in our sleeve where we want to go, and you can watch the show at your service on RTE on 13th October.
Oh, you were Francis Brennan, were you?
We were with the Francis and John, we were, right. And it was absolutely amazing experience. And you can watch our journey of the stage two of two more accommodations and Pan Diner. But there's also stage three where we will be adding the sauna, but not like any sauna you right now have an island. We want to do a sauna therapy, because sauna is so healthy for you if you do it right, okay? There is a lot of elements to sauna what people are not aware of yet.
So what is the right way growing to do a sauna then, Iveta?
Well, one of the healthiest things to do the sauna is on an empty stomach at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
It's healthy. It's so good for your heart and well-being. And we also have, well, actually, no, I'm not going to give you all the secrets. You will just have to wait and see. I'll keep that under my wrap.
All right. And listen to me. How many does Pond Beach Resort accommodate at the moment?
So Pond Beach at the moment, up to now, we had two houses. The Maple is wheelchair accessible and sleeps four people, overlooking pond with a hot tub. Then you have an Oak, which has two separate king-size beds and bedrooms, separate and living space and so on, sleeps six people, again, has a private hot tub overlooking pond and dining area, front garden with barbecue and so on. And now we added this week two more properties, which is Hazel, which have outdoor baths and suitable for two people. Ooh, and nice. The last one is the Pine, and it has bean bags and big porch and lovely accommodation overlooking a pond.
Wow.
But we have four.
It sounds fantastic. And come here, the weather doesn't put people off, no?
Saying that, we change with weather. We make it cozy, and the accommodation is not, it's warm and insulated, that it's actually warmer there than in our own house. And, you know, the hot tub is nicer in a cold weather than it is in a hot. And you have this massive porch over your head. So it doesn't matter if it's a summer, winter, spring, or autumn, you have that lovely honeymoon or romantic getaway overlooking the pond.
Wonderful.
And not to add it also that you have a sports field if it's a nice weather. You can throw a ball and sandy volleyball, life-size chess. You can lie down on a pebble beach, bally beds, doesn't matter what weather it is. And in evening time, overlook the birds, how they come for a drink. It's amazing to watch it.
Amazing. All right. Well, listen, who needs the Bahamas for a beach? Yvette Bow, long success to you. I think it's a mad thing to do, but you've obviously done it and succeeded at it. And Laois now has its own beach. Listen, it's fantastic to talk to you. And where can people find out more about it?
Where can people find out about it? We have a Facebook page at the moment, and we also have our own website, which is linked to the Facebook, TikTok, and all the social media, called Pan Beach Resort.
Wonderful. All right, people will be logging on as we speak. Yvette Bow, thanks very much again for joining us on The Home Show.
Thank you for having us. Thanks again.
Inheritance tax is reckoned to be one of the big ticket items that the government has been flagging ahead of Budget 2025, which will be announced on the 1st of October. But does the state really protect certain assets after the death in the family? And it may be that you have to do all of the work yourself, between family disputes over the home, probate delays, and beneficiaries wanting to delay tax liabilities. It can all get very messy very quickly. So how can you protect your family home so that it ends up with the loved ones you intended to go to? Well, somebody who's no stranger to this and other tax dilemmas is financial advisor John Lowe, also known as the Money Doctor. John, you're very welcome back to The Home Show.
Thank you very much, Sinead.
Now, let's talk about first what happens to the family home after its owner passes away.
Well, if it's a joint owner, there's a mortgage protection that would be on the house. And it would pay off whatever the balance of that mortgage is generally, unless it's a level term policy whereby, you know, you could have a level term policy of say, 400,000, but you only owe 200,000. Well, you get the 200,000 paid off and the other 200,000 is sent to your bank account.
Okay, so, but in terms of the property itself, if you have a married couple who own that house and one of them dies, is it the case, as many families believe, that it just simply passes directly to the other person?
As far as you know, spouses are concerned, absolutely. But let me say this. In 2016, the Law Society had a consensus where they had 1.22 million families living in Ireland, but 152,000 of the couples were cohabiting. And, you know, of that number, 76,000 roughly were living with children. So it very much affects cohabiting couples if one party dies, even if you have mortgage protection. Because let me give you an example. Say you bought a house of 500,000, you borrowed 400,000, and you've got that mortgage protection for 400,000. So now the mortgage is down to, say, 200,000. So you, one of the partners die. So you've now got a property worth 500,000, which say is still the same price. And you've got you know, the 200,000 mortgage paid. Well, it doesn't stop there if you're a cohabiting partner, because you've now inherited half the property, even though there's no mortgage now on it. You've got a tax exemption because you're at the third level. Remember, it's 335 for parent to child.
335,000. That's the tax-free amount.
Yeah,
that
but unfortunately, this is the third category, which is 16,250.
Right.
So in other words, the inheritance is now 150, and with that 16,250, you've got a taxable liability of 133,750, which at 33% capital gains tax, that's 44,137.50 that other party has to find.
Okay, so let's just go through that again then for listeners, because if you have Mary and John, who are a married couple,
Yep.
And John unfortunately dies.
Yep.
Mary gets that house.
Absolutely.
Tax-free,
yep.
Unlimited.
Yep.
It's hers to keep with or without, you know, the mortgage being paid. It's hers.
Yep. Absolutely.
And there's no query over that.
Yep.
If Mary and John haven't got around to getting married, but yep. they've been together for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
what you're saying is that Mary only inherits half a house. Like her half of the house is all she owns.
Well, that's the mortgage. If there was a mortgage yeah. pay on it, whatever the differential, half of that is basically... A liability because she's actually taken her party's, mm. her partner's half.
And
or
she
has taken her partner's half. So that's a taxable amount because it's an inheritance. And even though they're kind of cohabiting for years and years and years, they're only allowed 16,250.
Before they pay tax. And of course, revenue really doesn't have much regard. We've always known they were unsentimental, but they don't care that you've loved each other or that you've, you know, shared all your lives and your holidays and your money or anything like that. Okay, so John, that is going to come as a shock, as it does every year, I know, to a lot of cohabiting couples who don't realise that, in fact, they are not treated like a couple in the eyes of tax law. They are treated effectively as strangers coming in at that lowest level that they can that they can inherit. Is there any way to mitigate against that likely tax bill that could arise?
There is, Sinead. There's a policy called the life of another, where each partner takes out life cover on the other partner and pays the other partner's policy monthly premiums. So, the sum assured would be for the amount of tax payable. In this case, it's $44,137.50. So round it off to $50,000. So now you can keep the home without firstly having to find a way of coming up with the capital acquisition tax to pay, but also not having to get married. So the thing is that the life of another, once you take out a policy in your partner's name and then you pay the premiums and he or she pays your premiums, then you're covered. Because then it will pay the lot.
Okay.
But a lot of cohabiting couples do not know of this life of another.
Mm. Now, like all life insurance, if you're taking it out when you're a little bit older, maybe you're in your 50s
yeah.
or your 60s, when people are maybe thinking about their mortality and thinking about what might happen in the future, it's going to be expensive.
Not necessarily. I mean, if you're taking out a policy as a 30-year-old and you want a 30-year or 35-year policy, they give you a set figure for the monthly premium that you pay until you die. It doesn't go up. It doesn't go. Where it does increase is, you know, your typical kind of Section 72 policy or a whole of life policy. Whole of life means that, you know, no matter when you die, you're going to get a lump sum from this policy.
Mm.
However, the older you get, the more expensive it becomes.
Do you think it's easier and cheaper just to get married, John?
Well, it certainly does an awful lot of consideration about cohabiting or getting married. I think the at the moment financially it's probably better to get married, but there's an awful lot involved in that.
I knew you were an old romantic at heart. There's no doubt about it. Finally, John, before I let you go, budget's coming up on the 1st of October. There's been some flags flown about changes to inheritance tax, maybe increasing the threshold between parents and children. Would you welcome that?
Yes, I would. I think, you know, when you look back at April 2009, the amount a parent could give a child was $542,000. And so it's come right back down, and it's now 335. The talk is it's going to go up to 400,000, 65,000. Still, it's better than, as my mother used to say, a slap in the face.
Indeed.
However, the second and third categories have never been changed in the last five or six budgets, where they have slightly increased that A category, parent to child.
Mm.
So I think the whole thing needs revamping.
All right. Well, we'll see if they are. We'll take your advice and new changes might be announced then on the day. John Lowe, Money Doctor, thank you once again for joining me on the Home Show. And if anybody wants to get the definitive last word on all matters tax, well, of course, you can buy the Money Doctor book, which is brought out every single year. And I'm sure next year will be no different. John, thanks a million.
A real pleasure. Thank you so much.
We may not realise the extent that interior design of our homes can boost our physical and mental well-being, positively and negatively. But when it comes to light, colour or even scent, it can all play a role in how we actually feel in our homes. So what can be done to help keep you in the right mood to tackle all that life has to throw at you? Well, interior designer Anne Toohey is here with some simple and powerful things that you can do. Anne, you're very welcome back to the Home Show.
It's always a joy to be here. And this is a particular design pet of mine. So I'm absolutely delighted.
Is it good? Okay. And like, it is important because we do hear that, oh, you can paint up the walls and put up fresh curtains and you'll feel better. But actually, you kind of claim it's about a lot more than that. And you start with ditching negative association with the things around you. Now, this isn't a kind of a feng shui thing for you. So describe to me what it is you mean.
No, this is pure psychology. If you can imagine in your home, we've all been through life traumas. We've been through illnesses, sad times, divorce, bereavement. And we tangibly have things in our home that remind us of those unhappy times. It could be a gift from somebody you can't stand, maybe a photograph of somebody you absolutely detest. It could be something that's in a colour that you don't like, because our memories are tied up in things like colour and association of colour and scent. And there's so much that we have in our home that actually bring us sorrow and we don't even realise it. I mean, you could walk up to your front door and it's painted a bottle green, which was the colour of your school uniform, which you hated. Well, that's setting you up for failure the minute you walk in the door because it's going to subliminally remind you. You know, you could have a candle burning in your bedroom that an aunt that you really didn't like because she wasn't very kind to you when you were a child, that was her perfume, and you wonder why you don't get a good night's sleep. You know, it's all these subliminal things that we don't even take account of because they're there, but they're actually affecting our subconscious and having a negative effect on it.
So it's a sense that like our kind of primal senses guide us and they are much more powerful than we think they are. And you're saying that that extends to colour and smell and the things around us. So you're saying ditch all that. If you're getting a kind of a negative vibe off it, just get rid of it.
I guarantee your listeners will know exactly what I'm talking about as they look around their house. So instead, I don't want to dwell on the negative because that's not me. There's so much that we can do to improve and make our home a happy home. So that means the artwork that you love, put it up. If you've got a really expensive piece of art in a room that you don't use very much, take it into your kitchen. Have fresh flowers in your house. I like to create a signature scent in my home and I encourage my clients to do the same, where you pick a scent that you absolutely adore. And this is the one scent that you have running through your house quietly, gently, but not a mix and match of different candles and smells, but to have the one running all the way through. I've got a gorgeous Brook and Scholes one at the minute, salted caramel. I adore it, but it's in every single room and that grounds me. And when my boys go away, I put a little candle into their bag so that it reminds them of home, because that grounds you and it makes you feel very comfortable and very comforted.
That's a great idea, because I know I like lots of people, I get gifts of candles, I pick one up in a shop, I buy it, I have a diffuser from somewhere else, I have, you know, a kind of a bathroom spray from somewhere else, and those scents can kind of meld and they are confusing. So I think it's a great idea just having one scent following you all the way through. It doesn't have to be like Jo Malone, but you're just saying stick with the same if it's floral or if it's sandalwood or if it's some other type of theme. Is that it?
As long as you love it, and you could even change it with the seasons. But it does something. It grounds you. Your kids come home, they get that smell of home. It's a bit like your granny's apple tart baking in the oven. You know, these are really positive, good things for us. It's like I wear Hermes Eau de Brevet perfume. I sprayed some before I came in here because it puts me in good form. It's the only perfume that I use, and I use it all the time because scent does improve your mood.
Indeed, it does.
Scientifically proven. Of course it is.
Indeed it does. And I only use one perfume as well, day or night, even though you're supposed to have different things for different times. Now, the next tip you have is to take a conscious walk through your house. Now, sure, we're walking through our homes every day of the week. What do you mean by this?
You're walking through, but you don't see it. So I would actually encourage you to come to your front door as though you're a guest to your home and see, you know, do you like the colour that you painted your door years ago? You know, are there tubs of flowers and colour to welcome you coming in? Open the door and come into your hall. Is it strewn with the kids' school bags and gym gear? Or Do you have some fresh flowers there to greet you? Do you have a photograph of somebody you love on the console table? Do you have soft lighting? You know, is it a welcoming, nurturing space to come into? It's very easy to change this once you consciously decide. Even a declutter and a clear out will improve the energy, because it's all about energy. I think our energy is the most vital component in ourselves and in our homes. And there are homes that have fantastic energy and homes that don't. Light is very important as well. Artificial light and getting that light. We talked about this before, Sinead, about layering our lighting, getting as much natural light in. And another thing that I would say is to get yourself a compass and become familiar with the aspect of each room, because this color psychology and this color science involved here. And in fact, if any of your listeners want, I have a free guide that it took me ages to put together of the correct colours to paint your north, south, east and west facing spaces. And I've realised from talking to people that the northeastern space is the most challenging. But anyway, I've put that together. If any of them want that, they'll find me on Instagram and they can have it absolutely as a gift from me. But to walk, organise your hall, make your hall a beautiful space to walk through, and do the same with every single room in your house. Over time, you will get there. And a little tip, I often say to people, if they're selling their home and staging it for sale, but you can do this as you're doing your walkthrough, take a photograph of the room, because it's almost like looking into a stranger's room. It has a very different dynamic, and you can see, oh my God, that lamp doesn't belong there, or that doesn't need to be here, or I can take that piece of art out of the kitchen and put it here. It's fascinating.
Really? So you think that the act of taking a photograph and seeing your sitting room on a camera is different from the naked eye walking into it every day?
Without a doubt, it depersonalizes it in some way. It's bizarre. I don't even know how I figured that out. It does work. Okay. It really, really does work.
Oh, you'll have everybody getting up now and going around taking photographs of their rooms. Now, the other thing that you have suggested, and look, you mentioned it there, Anne, the whole thing of decluttering and the kids' school bags lying around and all that. And look, it's always easier said than done. But you want to embrace your kind of inner Marie Kondo. It's about bringing the joy and getting rid of the stuff that you don't need. But it is hard, isn't it?
It is hard. I have a little tip. Actually, I have a decluttering course, and one of the first things I do in week one is to get people to declutter their kitchen, because there's no emotion involved in your kitchen. And if you start in one corner of the room and work around, you will get there eventually. You know, it's easy to throw out Tupperware containers or mugs or whatever that you don't need. When it gets to your clothes and your sentimental items, it's a little bit more challenging. But if anybody wants to follow me on Instagram, I have talked about this till the cows come home, because I do believe on it. Like, we had to downsize. We had built a very large house when we left Dublin, and we decided to downsize, and then the sale happened really quickly. So I had to declutter 20 years worth of living in a couple of weeks. I do not recommend that anybody does that. Honestly, it was very stressful, but I devised a system, and the system works. And it's, you know, it's common sense. Everything comes down to common sense. Interior design is all about common sense. You know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter how well it looks. You know, like, if you had a beautifully decorated living room with beautifully arranged furniture, and a photograph of somebody that you can't stand, or a piece of art that reminds you of somebody that you absolutely detest, you're not going to enjoy that room. How can you? That cloud is always going to be over you.
Yeah.
But you don't realise it, and you don't know why you're not happy in that room.
So it really is about finding those things that inspire you and make you happy. And I know that there's a big push on at the moment. Lots and lots of people have had them now for the last few years, and I have a couple myself. And this is the old gallery wall, where you're trying to put up photographs, or in some cases posters or little mirrors or little gewgaws, up on the wall in a kind of a structured way. And I must say, when it's well done and when you see it well done, it is joyful to look at it. And that's something that you like the idea of as well.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. I'd forgotten. That's one thing that I say: get rid of the photographs of those that you don't like. Instead, put up smiling, happy photographs of your children smiling, holiday times, good times. That will actually make you smile inside every time you see them. And I also have a guide for the perfect gallery wall. I'm sure that's in my feed somewhere as well. Well, because you're right, it has to be done properly.
It does. And I wish I'd had that guide when I sat down with it on my kitchen floor trying to work out the dimensions, because you're not just saying, where does this picture go? You're saying it has to be 4 inches from this one and 3 inches down from that one and have enough going every which way. So it's easier said than done. But I think by putting in those happy memories, rather than just kind of the po-faced ancestors or, you know, the grand-aunt Marjorie, because she's always gone on that wall, is probably a really good idea. And a lot of the time, of course, we do put our kids in there. We put their kind of their staging posts in life, you know, up on the wall. But actually, if you have a picture of your kids now, that's nearly good enough, isn't it? And swap the others out for something else.
I think so. And maybe have the informal pictures. A quick little guide for your listeners. Decide on the size and make a rectangle or a square shape. Decide on the side of wall you want to fill. Try to go for the same color frames if you can. The IKEA Riva ones, I really like black and white. Or if you have a mishmash, you can paint them one color or the other. And then take that guide, that size, and put it on the floor. You're absolutely right. And then start messing. Do the outline first and then fill it in randomly. There's no science to that. You know, you'll get your spacings right. Your eye will guide you that way. But you'll get a very effective, very cohesive, professionally arranged gallery wall.
That is fantastic. And I know that you love your masterclasses now and you run loads and loads of them. And also the live sessions up on Instagram. So people can look for you there. It's The Room Junkie, isn't that right?
It's actually Room Junkie.
Room Junkie, Anne. All right. Yep. Now, just before I let you go, Anne, because you're always generous with your time, I mentioned at the very top of the show that we all have our morning routines. I am kind of wedded to mine now and nothing's going to change it. My coffee, my crossword, my Pilates. What about you? How do your mornings go? Because I know you split your time between beautiful Donegal and equally beautiful Spain.
Well, the routine is exactly the same, because let me tell you, for most of my latter life, when the boys were growing up, mornings were, you know, rushing out the door, feeding the boys, school bags, dogs, was so frantic. Now, before I get out of bed tonight, I actually say to myself, 10 things I'm grateful for today. I always find 20, always. And then I immediately get up, I open the window wide, even in the wilds of Donegal, and I let that air come into the bedroom to refresh the energy. But I'll also let the light come in, even in winter, into the rods in the back of my eye, because it starts my circadian rhythm and it gets me in the groove for a good night's sleep. And I do lots. But the third thing I do to make it quick is I make my bed, and I make it beautifully, because there's a theory and a science behind it. If you make your bed and make it beautifully before you leave your bedroom, you have accomplished something pretty incredible by the time you walk out the door. And there's other things that I do as well, but I don't think we have time for that. But that's a good way to start. A very good way to start. It is indeed.
And I actually could not agree with you more. I mean, this is the time to pile up the cushions and straighten the duvet and leave your bedroom looking absolutely fab the minute you get up, because you kind of feel the room done now and I don't have to worry about it until I come to bed. And you'll always be glad not to come back up to a crumpled bed set that evening. Isn't that right?
It's an absolute gift. A game changer for me. I don't say this lightly, but my morning routine has changed my life. And no matter what happens, it's my non-negotiable. It happens.
Indeed. All right. Well, listen, Anne Toohey, the Room Junkie, thank you so much for joining us again on The Home Show. You always bring a breath of fresh air and a little bit of joy to News Talk on Saturday morning. So thank you very much for joining us.
You're so kind.
And that's all we have time for on this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed our guests. And I hope that you will tune in next time to us if you'd like to get involved or you'd like to contact us to give us any hints or tips or voices you'd like to hear on or topics you'd like to hear covered. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on socials at SineadRyan100 and my direct mails are open. And don't forget to check out all of our other shows, if you have missed them on the podcast on the News Talk website. Thanks to Simon Keane producing this week, and Aidan McKelvey and Stephen McClune was on sound. We will do it all again next time in about a week. We'll see you then. And in the meantime, have a fantastic week.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.